Welcome to WonderCast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. This month of June, WonderCast will focus on resources that highlight or support dads and the role of chronic illness in their lives. Today, I am joined once more by Wonders and Worries colleague, Jacqueline Rybacek, to discuss the exciting release of her new book. Join us as we talk through this incredible tool and the supportive resource it can be for your own family. Today, I'm joined once more by Jacqueline Rybacek to discuss the release of her incredible book, I Wonder What It Is Like When a Parent Has Cancer, Max's Story. In this series, we meet Max and hear about all his wonders and worries surrounding his father's illness. I'm so excited to talk about it today.
Thank you for having me back, Julie. Yes, my name is Jacqueline Rybacek, and I have the honor of being the program manager at Wonders and Worries for the Austin area and also a child life specialist. And now I'm super excited to add the title author to the list.
First of all, brava. What an incredible resource for families facing a cancer diagnosis. There is so much I love about this book, and I'm so grateful you're here today so that we can really kind of get into the writer's perspective of it versus just what we would interpret from reading it.
Julie, it's an honor to talk about all things dads today. We know what an important part of the family they are, and there was a real lack of literature as far as children's books. When we go to educate the clients we work with about dads with illnesses, the dads just were lacking in representation. And so Wonders and Worries wanted to fix that. And we just decided we're going to create it. And we're so excited about this whole series that's going to touch upon all different kinds of diagnoses and add in that rich and wonderful child life language. This will be a great tool for parents, for professionals, and obviously for the children themselves.
So exciting. Why don't you start by telling me a little bit about what inspired you to write this book?
Sure. So in our field, we use books as a beautiful bridge to introduce hard topics to kids. It's such a great way to teach them and to have them open up about their own stories. They may not be ready to share their feelings and thoughts, but we can relate it to, hey, have you ever felt like this boy in the story felt about his mom or dad's cancer or illness? Or I wonder what that child was thinking.
For those that haven't read the book, do you want to give a little synopsis about the storyline?
I would love to. So the Wonders and Worries book series is going to focus on a different child and a different illness each book. And so our first book focuses on Max's story and a dad who has cancer. And it is such a rich children's book in that it very gently weaves all of the core things we think are important to walk a child through when their parent is diagnosed with cancer. So we have medical education done in a very developmentally appropriate way. We have pictures of equipment. We focus on coping tools for the children. We focus on who is the support team for your parents, who is the support team for you. We normalize the expression of feelings and all the different questions they have, all in a very fun format for children and parents to use. So we really wanted to be able to give adults the beautiful child life language we use to explain things to kids and a platform that they can use to guide their child through their illness and empower them to know how to talk about these things.
In terms of your target audience, what age groups do you feel like this book best works with?
So this is a great book for the elementary age like 3 to 12, but even teenagers. I encourage a little trick I have is to have teens read it to their younger brothers and sisters because they still get a lot out of it and a lot of their questions answered.
This book does have a lot, like you said, a lot of rich content. Do you feel like this is something that could be read in one setting, or do you recommend breaking it up into
either nightly readings or little chapter sections.
So it really is a multi-tiered book. So we designed it, if a child has an attention span, you can cover the entire book in one sitting, but it's really divided into little short snippet chapters that focus on introducing the child to a person on the support team or a particular concept. So it would be great to break it up over the course of a week or over the course of several weeks and come back to it and revisit it as your family actually goes through those experiences. So it highlights surgery and chemotherapy and radiation, and you can pick the parts that relate to your story and your particular situation. It's also designed to be used not just for the child themselves, but again, for the parent, to model for them the language and the topics that are important to process with your child, but also for professionals in the field. We wanted school counselors, psychologists who might have a client who's dealing with a medical issue in their family, social workers. We really wanted it to be a tool that could be used by all of these entities to help a child process through this and cope.
I think it's so lovely. How would you as a clinician prefer to use this book in your practice?
So at Wonders and Worries, we have a curriculum that's broken up across several weeks that focuses on a different topic each week. And so some weeks we focus on the medical education piece. Some weeks we focus on the coping. So I'm going to use the book at each section that I want to follow the activity that I do in session. So if I'm focusing on the medical education piece with a child or teen that day, I'm going to read the snippets that cover the medical, the explanation of surgery and chemotherapy and radiation. If we're focusing on the coping section or feelings, I'm going to pull out the pages where Max is asking questions or is having a breakdown because he's really scared and worried. So I'm going to pull out the portions that relate to the therapeutic topic I'm focusing on that day. But there's really no wrong way to use it. I don't think you can harm anything, because I have really worked hard to hide a lot of Easter eggs throughout the storyline. A big underlying theme in this book is something that you and I have seen in our work through many, many years with families, right? In that oftentimes dads don't know what to do or how to respond to their children when they're the ones diagnosed or when the mom is diagnosed. They oftentimes want to be the fixer. We hear that. We've seen it so many times. The dads just don't know what to do because they can't fix cancer. They can't make it okay for their family. They don't know what to do in these situations. And they oftentimes end up throwing themselves into their jobs and work or withdrawing from the family. And so we really wanted to model and normalize how, we want to be able to make things right for our family. We want to give them hope, but we want to also be honest with them. And so I love that this story adds those themes of what happens when you can't fix it. What do you do?
Tell me about some of the little secret takeaways that from a clinical standpoint that you want to highlight for maybe clinicians that are listening.
Sure. It was so fun to develop this. So some core values that I had in creating the book was, one, I wanted it to relate to people of all backgrounds and all genders and all ethnicities. So if you really notice in the book, every different helper represents a different culture, a different ethnicity. We also worked hard to represent even differently abled bodies. So even the social worker in the book, she has a metal leg. It's really subtle. So what isn't literally printed out in the words, the pictures really are powerful in telling their own story. So I feel like it's a well-rounded representation of what different families can look like and different helpers and different support teams. And then also the male perspective of growing up. Max is growing up in a family of fixers where his grandpa is always building things and dad is always building things. And they're used to being able to repair and fix things, but in this situation, they can't. And what do Max and Dad do? And what are their resources? And what are their tools? So one of the Easter eggs is just the theme of tools. Like they, not just the literal sense of tools, but what tools do we need to get through these hard things in life? How can we think about who's going to be our support as adults? Letting the child know two things. It's important for the child to know who their support team is and all the different people in their lives who are there for them, who can help them cope. But also, as we've seen in session, Julie, kids worry about their parents being supported, right? We know that they protect them. They don't always want to ask their parents their hard questions or get them upset or bother them or worry them. And so I love that this book also lays out, hey, these are all the people who are there for mom and dad too, who are helping answer their questions, who are helping take care of them. Like mom and dad are supported to kind of take the weight off the child from being the protector. I just love that the what's not said is still really very much said throughout the book.
So one of the things that we hear a lot from parents at Wonders and Worries is they have concerns sometimes when they start giving information that it's going to lead to more wonders or more worries just in general for their children. A lot of parents are hesitant to explain cancer at all. They just want to call it mommy or daddy's illness. Can you kind of touch on the importance of information for kids, what the benefit of that is?
That is a very core principle that Wonders and Worries is that your biggest goal is to maintain that trusting relationship with your child, right? So we want them to know that we will always give you good information. We will always give you honest information. You want to maintain that trust with them. That doesn't mean you'll always give them all the information, but your kids need to know that they can come to you for what is true. And so we introduce it in small amounts. We encourage parents to first check in with what their child already knows, really establish, you know, what have you noticed? You know, mommy's been going to the doctors a lot, or daddy's been going to the doctors a lot, and work from there and scaffold the information. And that's what the book can help do too in very small snippets. Know that they're always listening. So whether you have this hard talk or not, they are putting pieces together in their own way. And as child life specialists, we found that, you know, kids are amazing observers, but they're not always accurate interpreters, right? They don't have the years of experience. They haven't been on this earth that long to figure out what all these pieces mean. So whether you're talking to your child or not, they are putting the pieces together. And we found that they often put them together in a much scarier way than even reality, that what they come up with in their heads. So it's really important to create an open and honest environment where you can talk about these things. And I always encourage parents to create, you've heard me say this before, Julie, but rhythms and rituals for checking in. So in the beginning of the story, Max's family has a family meeting where they introduce what's going on with dad and start with a little bit of information and explanation, and then they build upon it throughout the book. So we encourage parents to always be modeling just, it's okay to talk about it. This isn't the elephant in the room. Even if your kids never have any questions for you and they don't feel comfortable, you're just checking in and saying, hey, do you want to know what's going on this week? Do you want an update? Some children are information seekers and they're hungry for it. They want to know everything, every detail. Who'd you see today? What did they tell you? Other kids, other siblings may be like, no, I'm good. And I'm always encouraging parents. They love you. I have parents, a lot of parents say, we had the hard conversation and told them, and I don't think my teenager cares at all. They just went on their way. But we know that children need and teens need time to process, right? They don't always know what to ask in the moment or how to say it. And so that's another way that books are a great help. It gives language and a platform from which to have the conversations from. There's just so many tidbits in encouraging parents. Yes, whatever the topic is, whatever the hard topic is in life, whether it's a cancer diagnosis or terminal illness or drugs or alcohol or friendships, we know that we want to create a relationship with our kids of open and honest communication, that they know they can get the right information from us. There may be times where you say, I don't know, or you know, that's a really great question. Why don't you write that down for my doctor and I'll ask him? Or, you know, I'm not ready to share that information right now, or you're not ready to receive it. But when the time is right, there's ways to answer when the timing's not right. But we definitely want to maintain the relationship of you can come to me for good information.
You talked about the great tool of having teens be engaged by being the ones reading it to their siblings, because I know that parents have asked before, do you find that there is a risk involved with having different age groups listening in at the same time to a story? Or do you find that it's more of that scaffolding where one is kind of helping reflect with the other in their own way?
I love that you're thinking along those lines, because every child and every teen is different, right? Every personality is different. We know there are some kids that are really sensitive that can't handle as much information or worried. There are anxious kids. I think it's impossible to give a blanket answer. It really comes from knowing your child and knowing each personality. So for some families, we help them come up with a plan to have the conversations individually, right? To tailor it to that child and their personality and their developmental level. Other parents know their kids learn a lot from each other, and the siblings are very encouraging, and they can handle that. So it can look different. It can look like a family meeting with all the different ages and just general information given, and you follow up individually with each child, or it can be that you have a separate conversation with each of your kids, knowing that they're very different and they may need different things. It's okay if you do it all at once and it doesn't go quite right. I'm always encouraging parents that it can look, one kid may run to their room and slam their door. One kid may start crying. One kid may be like, okay, great, thanks. Can I go ride my bike and go meet up with my friend? They may have very different responses, and that's normal. That really is normal. And so you give them time to process and you follow up with each one. But yes, it really comes from knowing your child and knowing what each one needs. So you may break it up or you may do it all together.
What do you recommend as being a good follow-up activity to reading these books?
And we're going to have lots of resources on our website, and we have an activity book that you can purchase as well, but through our store on Wonders and Worries website. But I really model in the book the different activities we literally do in session with the kids. And so some great follow-ups would be to create a question star. So in the book, Max's mom creates a question star. We literally do that at Wonders and Worries. It's a wonderful way as kids come up with things to write it down on a slip of paper and put it in the jar so that we can address those as we go along. We talk about in his backpack in the book, there's Play-Doh to squeeze. So you can invite them. Sometimes we invite kids to create what they think cancer looks like, and then they can squish it and smash it. Sometimes we invite kids to create an anger monster out of Play-Doh. What would that look like? And what would he say if he could speak? We also use a lot of different art and feelings activities, a stress target where you make on a poster board the circles and you write all over the target things that stress you out or upset you, including about the illness. And then you can throw water balloons or Nerf darts, or we also do wet toilet paper at the target. So lots of different active ways once you have those hard talks. You definitely, each child has their different own way they like to cope, but providing opportunities, like in the book, Max and his sister have a journal that they add to and talks about keeping a gratitude list. We know scientifically that gratitude is a great antidote for depression. So maybe during this time, your family literally keeps a gratitude list during this time of, even though our family's going through this hard thing, that we can do hard things. And these are all the wonderful things in the midst of this hard thing. People bringing dinner, maybe mom or dad working less and having more time at home. Maybe it will grandma and grandpa coming and staying and more people showing their love and care. We really do guide kids, like with any challenges in life, even though there's this hard thing, let's look for the good.
Maybe if someone is listening and they don't have a cancer diagnosis in their immediate life, is this book still a safe option for a child to just pick up and read at any time.
Yes. The pictures are gentle. The language is gentle. I would use it with my own kids. If a family member or a teacher or a neighbor got cancer, it's a really great base level way to introduce information. A lot of kids have a frame of reference for some of this as well. Like this, when we get to talk about the cells and the blood cells and the side effects, a lot of times in science class, they've learned very basic knowledge about the blood and the body. It's not that these are like taboo topics. It's really a part of life, right? You know, we prep our kids for so many things, Julie. We prep them for stranger danger. We prep them for what to do in the case of a fire, not to play with fire. We prep them for how to answer questions that they or don't want to answer. But we very rarely think about illness and death as things we need to prep our kids for until we get there. And what do we know is unilaterally a part of life? Death and loss and sickness. It impacts us all, regardless of where we live or what language we speak. And so I think these books are very much just a part of everyday life because they are things we're going to encounter. I think it's great to take advantage of teachable moments before you're in the pain, before you're in the heat of it, to introduce these topics, to talk about what happens to bodies when they get sick or stop working. You know, in educating about grief and loss, I'm always telling parents, take advantage of those moments where you're on a nature walk and you see a dead bird. Or unfortunately, if you're driving on the road and there's a dead animal and that's really upsetting. But those are great teachable moments to begin to talk about what happens when a body gets hurt and they can't fix it. It stops working. And the animal stops breathing and the animal dies. It's a part of life. And these should be topics we're naturally reading about and talking about because they are part of the developmental lifespan, no matter who you are.
How do you envision this book kind of matriculating into the different pockets we talked about, into social workers, maybe into a therapeutic environment, into a school environment? What does that look like in your dream world?
Sure. So it really was designed for any of those people to be able to pick it up because it has medical education, expression of feelings and questions, and coping skills building. And so anyone in those fields is very familiar with those categories of therapeutic interventions, right? We want to educate kids in their language about what the issue is. We want to invite them to express feelings and questions about it. And then we want to help them become detectives about their own body, where they store their feelings and stress, and what strategies work for them to process and get those feelings out. What positive choices. And so because every book is going to have those bare bones, regardless of the topic, we're going to make it, I wonder what it's like when a parent has ALS. I wonder what it's like when a parent has heart disease. And it's going to be a different child's story, maybe Sally's story or Amy's story or Fred's story. It's going to always come back to the core basic foundations of medical education in the child-friendly language, expression of feelings, questions, and building of coping strategies. And those bones are what all of us professionals use to guide our interventions. So I think it will be a wonderful format for any entity to be able to use in that way.
So have any of the other series started in production or in planning? What's next for the book series?
So fun to think and dream about. We are in the trenches of gathering priority. What health issues are not being covered in bookstores, already out there being marketed in our own field? And so right now we're taking stock of which one should be priority, and then we'll base it from there. So more to come. Yes, we are very excited to be creating this very important tool, not only for our child life community, but for you, the parents who are already attached and closest to your kids, and then for professionals who know how to do those important interventions, but just don't have that medical language that is our special niche. And we just want to come alongside of you and empower you, whoever you are, even down to the littlest mind and heart.
I love that. Okay, is there anything else that you wanted me to cover that you wish I had?
I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on the concept of the father, because in our work, I'm thinking of Father's Day is coming up and dads are so important. And we've seen so many different ways dads have handled illness in our work. And so I just want to encourage them and empower them who are struggling with a diagnosis or perhaps even end of life or a terminal disease, that your influence is just as powerful in life as it is in death. And your legacy is just as powerful in life as it is in death. I want to encourage dads that there is a good way to have these conversations and to guide your kids, and even a good way to end things. You know, we don't want to think about that. We don't want to talk about that. But Julie, you and I have both seen the power of when a family is willing to acknowledge that this is happening. And that's hard, right? It's a journey in and of itself for adults. We don't want to tell our kids these painful things. We don't even want to think about us not being here for them. But we know that when a family can accept that and begin to prepare for it and even walk their children through it till the end together, that is very powerful for the kids we work with. It's a completely different way those kids cope than the ones who didn't get the chance to maintain the relationship towards the end and have that closeness and have those conversations. And so I hope in a small way this story helps dads who may be diagnosed think about those things, to not be afraid to lean in, to not be afraid to go there. One of my favorite pages is with Max when he's talking to his grandpa, who's this strong veteran male role model, and they're crying together. One way it addresses that it's okay for all people to cry. It doesn't matter how tough you are. It doesn't matter if you're a male or a female, a grown up or a child. Crying is a normal, healthy way to get our feelings out. And two, it addresses children's fear that their parents will die. And that was questioned a little bit whether to include that in the book. And I really fought for that because we know that that is a very normal question and fear kids have. They may not feel brave enough to voice it to their parents, but when we get them in our sessions and we're helping them think about all their worries and fears, we hear that. We know whether it's stage one or stage four, it goes through their mind. And so that's an important conversation to have with your child. And a lot of times we guide parents to say, you know what? The doctors are doing everything they can do right now. I have a great team, and this is what's happening right now. But if things change, I will let you know. And that really is enough for kids. Sometimes parents wait because they just don't have the answers themselves. And I get that. But it's okay to let them know what's happening right now and to give them the confidence that if things change, we will let you know. And that really, we know, does so much for the child and teen in their coping and their being able to engage in just everyday living and not stressing and worrying about what's happening. And so I just wanted to remind dads, you are such important people in your children's and teens' lives. And if you have to walk through sickness and even a terminal diagnosis, please know that they need you just as much then. Do not be afraid of those hard conversations and questions. There is a way to do it in such a powerful way that your legacy lives on and helps them cope.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.